1221, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And on this Wednesday, we're going to check in with Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
You get any sleep last night?
A little. Not enough, but I caught a few hours in between.
Is this sort of like the playoffs or the Super Bowl to you?
No, you know, what campaigns are like that. This is, you know, I'm a lot less excited about these than I used to be. We just don't really hear anything interesting in them anymore. There's not a lot of news, and we don't get a lot of explanations. We get lists and sort of combative rhetoric, but it's no different than a speech that the president would give out on the stump nowadays. So it's, you know, we're just, here in Washington, we're so overexposed to this sort of stuff. I imagine for a lot of people who are tuning in to see their president address Congress and don't pay attention to this regularly, it probably is a pretty neat thing. But, you know, when you see this day in, day out, and none of these are particularly new proposals except for, you know, the minimum wage, which you and I, we'd actually expected that one, and you and I have actually talked about that earlier in the week before he even confirmed he was going to do it. You know, I guess that sort of says it. If we could predict it, then probably not a lot of news.
Yeah. Hey, so what are you going to do with your raise, the one that the president told Congress to give us?
You know, we should definitely talk with the Washington Times and get them on that. That's a good question.
Yeah. All right. I saw your story. Fewer signs of bipartisanship last night. Indicated by what? Those sitting with one another? Opposing party members?
Yeah, remember after Gabby Giffords, the congresswoman, was shot, and that was at the beginning of 2011, just after Republicans had taken control of Congress. So after the partisan 2010 elections, there was the shooting out in Tucson, and it was just a few weeks later that the president gave his State of the Union, and we were all still very concerned about that, and lawmakers decided that they would sit with each other, basically cross party lines, across the aisle, literally, and sit with each other as a way of trying to tone down the rhetoric that they said was part of the cause of that shooting and part of the, basically said things had gotten out of hand. You know, here we are 3 years later, and there are still some people who do it. The senators in particular did do it last night, a decent number of those, but the House lawmakers had essentially given it up. And so if your listeners remember, 3 years ago, when you would have an applause line, you would have people standing up, sort of half of the crowd standing up, but it wasn't just the right side of the chamber or the left side of the chamber. It was people scattered throughout the chamber. And if you looked last night when you had a partisan applause line, it was clearly one side of the chamber standing and the other side not standing, which was that's the evidence that we've sort of lost that that bipartisan seating thing has faded.
Mm-hmm. And we've lost it under Barack Obama.
Yeah, I mean, you could say it started under him, and it's expired under him. You know, part of the reason, somebody told me that part of the reason this fell to the wayside is that there's actually a value to viewers in being able to see one side of the chamber stand up and the other side sitting on their hand. You know, if you're a viewer and you don't pay regular attention to this sort of stuff, that's a pretty good indication when just half of the chamber standing, okay, the president just said something that's a partisan talking point.
Right.
If you see a weirder mixture of people standing, you're like, oh, well, that might be a more interesting proposal. That one might actually be going somewhere. So having the bipartisan seating might have been nice for the lawmakers. I'm not sure how much goodwill it actually did engender, but it might have been nice for them. But it may have actually done viewers a disservice and left them more confused about what the president was actually talking about.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I noticed is that he hit on a bunch of different issues last night. One of the big deals to him, at least in my mind, was his insistence and almost pounding the fist that, you know, he declared climate change settled science. It's a fact, he said with authority, you know. And the environmentalists must have stood up and cheered, but not all are happy because I guess he really didn't go after fossil fuels as much as they wanted them to.
Yeah. If you remember, he specifically said that we should go after natural gas, and he called it a bridge fuel. Natural gas is about half of the carbon content. content of say oil that you drill. And so there are some folks who like it a lot and say, hey, it's cleaner, so we should be using as much natural gas as possible if it helps wean us off of coal and off of oil. But the environmentalists, or at least a number of them, say, no, we shouldn't do any half measures. We shouldn't do weaning off. We should make the jump right now. You know, it's essentially an issue of how much damage are you willing to do to the economy right now, and, you know, if you believe that global warming is a problem, how big of a problem is it? Is it enough of a problem that you should accept essentially lower living standards and economic hit, maybe electricity problems right now, in order to get to this cleaner world that we would get to eventually? And the president was essentially signaling he's not willing to do major economic disruptions right now, and I think most Americans probably agree with that.
Yeah. All right, it's time to get to the absolute biggest story of the day around the country, and that would be the Justin Bieber story.
Oh, no.
The White House petition to deport him. This whole petition thing is kind of a funny idea that developed a couple of years back, right?
Yeah, and I've been sort of studying it for a while, and actually in the paper they have a long, probably too long, story looking at how the White House is paying less and less attention to these petitions and basically sort of letting them go. It's a weird thing. They aren't quite sure how to handle it. It's so complicated, and it's basically been taken over by a lot of foreign citizens, it looks like, fighting about issues in their own country. So a lot of the recent petitions that have come on board, about a fifth of all the petitions over the last month or so, have been about Ukraine, and they're basically Ukrainians asking the United States to pressure the UN to send in peacekeepers to the Ukraine. And you also have the Japanese and the Koreans, South Koreans, fighting back and forth, basically refighting World War II battles with each other through the White House petition site. So in that respect, how does the White House deal with that? I don't know. That's complicated. But, as you said, we do have this one that is very timely right now. Somebody in Detroit started a petition last week asking the White House to deport Justin Bieber for his run-in with the law last week, the drag racing where he has been charged with driving under the influence. And it took 6 days for that petition to get the 100,000 signatures needed, which will force the White House to respond to it. Now, when the White House responds is anybody's question. As my other story today showed, there's a petition that's been waiting for 2 years, and the successful petition got the number of signatures, but the White House hasn't responded to it yet. So who knows when they'll actually respond, but I should also note this is not the first time that the petition has asked for somebody to be deported. Back when the CNN anchor,
Piers Morgan.
Exactly. When he was criticizing the Second Amendment, a petition was instituted asking for him to be deported. That got enough signatures. The White House, Jay Carney, actually did respond to that, though he didn't respond to the deportation. He just said, hey, let's not criminalize free speech. He has a right to free speech here, even if he is a British citizen.
And I remember at the end of last year, Morgan actually thanked America for allowing him to stay.
We'll see if at the end of this year Justin Bieber is saying the same thing. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it should be. All right, Stephen, thanks for your help. Get some sleep.
My pleasure, Andy.
See ya. Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Been a busy man over the past few days. And what happens? After he does all of the State of the Union stuff and all of the political stuff, he dives into the Justin Bieber story. There's no end to it. All right, folks, stay tuned. A lot more to come, including we're going to check in with Dave Boyer, White House reporter. Obviously, it's been a busy 24 hours there. President's out on the road today. We'll find out exactly what he's up to. A little later in the hour, Nuclear Option Column is out with Charlie Hurt, the guy responsible for it. And he talks about, a guy named Preet. I'll let him explain that. That's on the way at about 12:45, right here on 1260 WRC. It's Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times.